The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right. Welcome to a Thursday. I'm Nicole Sandler here at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network, coming to you from the land of the sleepless yet again. So I apologize if I'm a bit punch drunk today. Doing my best. So we're watching the series, the limited series that's on CNN called 1968. And I can't help but wonder if insanity reigns every 50 years. And maybe 2018 is just another really fucked up year like 1968 was, a year fraught with changes, but with insanity. I don't know. There's some good TV on, in case you haven't seen it on CNN. I believe it's on Tuesday nights, is the Jim Jefferies show. Jim Jefferies is an Australian comedian, and he does really cutting, biting satire. The closest thing I can think of is sort of how the Daily Show used to be. And again, I may be biased because I've just not gotten into The Daily Show in the Trevor Noah era. But, you know, when Jon Stewart was at his height, that's what the Jim Jefferies show is. And then there's Samantha Bee. Samantha Bee on TBS, who is more hit and miss. I think she's more hit. I mean, I love her. I think she's great. I think she tells it like it is, even if she is the worst dresser on television. I don't know who picks out her clothes. I don't know. But hey, Sam, call me. I'm not exactly the fashionista, but I can help. I really can help. Anyway, she did a bit last night that deserves some attention because, well, it's a big story, finally gaining some traction this week. The revelation that the United States government is separating migrant children from their families at the border. So Sam Bee went off on it last night on Full Frontal on TBS.
The Trump administration is separating undocumented children from their parents at the border. It is part of Attorney General Jeff Sessions' plan to prosecute 100% of people who are crossing the border illegally. And this includes potential asylum seekers and undocumented workers.
Wow, 100% of people. That's a big goal for someone who's only 25% of a person. Tearing children away from their parents is so evil. It's the inciting incident in almost every movie we've ever cared about. If only Trump had as much empathy for Central American kids as I assume he does for a fictional fish who wants to touch a boat. But he doesn't. According to haunted marionette Jeff Sessions, these babies are actually baby criminals.
If you don't want your child to be separated, then don't bring them across the border illegally. It's not our fault that somebody does that.
Oh, shut up, Jeff Sessions. I've never been so conflicted over a public official ever. Jeff Sessions, the worst possible choice for an attorney general. Yet we need him to not be replaced because if Dump replaces him, he's going to replace him with someone who could then go ahead and fire Mueller and then just, you know, the investigation won't necessarily be derailed, but it will be held up and made even all the more complicated. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about what is going on at the border. And we're not talking necessarily about illegal border crossings here either. We're talking about families who come seeking asylum, who go to the designated entry points to turn themselves in to seek asylum in the United States. You know, the land, give us your tired, your poor, here's where lack of sleep comes in. Your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The land of the free and the home of the brave, you know, the place where we welcome immigrants. The great melting pot of our planet. Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore. So this is Samantha Bee had a lot more to say than just that. Now, I cut down the segment quite a bit, but it's still longer than clips I usually play. But it is worth it, especially since Sam Bee is being called out and criticized for the way she ended this bit. So I think I did a decent job of editing to not lose the guts of what she said, so you get it in the context in which it was meant and delivered.
Don't worry, the Trump administration has a really good explanation for why they're treating migrants like animals. It was all Obama's idea.
President Trump is blaming Democrats for his administration's controversial new policy.
It happened under the Obama administration. Separating illegal immigrant children from their families is not new under President Trump.
Well, neither is my alcoholism, but it's getting a lot worse under Trump. Okay, fine.
Touché.
They're half right. We have had awful immigration practices since, well, always, even under presidents we like seeing shirtless. A recent report from the ACLU describes hundreds of abuses of migrant children while in custody of the U.S. government during the Obama administration. So, no, Donald Trump didn't invent this issue. He's just making it so much worse.
So
now,
much worse.
Everyone who even approaches the border is treated like a criminal.
This is unprecedented. This is the worst thing I've seen in 25 plus years of doing the civil rights work. I mean, I am talking to these mothers, and they're describing their kids screaming, "Mommy, mommy, don't let them take me away." 5 years old, 6 years old, and they're just being ripped away. The medical evidence is overwhelming that we may be doing permanent trauma to these kids.
Yep.
I believe that study was published in the medical journal. Yeah, no shit. Of course, forcibly separating kids from their parents is traumatic. As John Kelly explained on NPR, that's the whole point.
A big name of the game is deterrence.
Even though people say that's cruel and heartless to take a mother away from her children.
Yeah, I think cruel and heartless, I wouldn't put it quite that way. The children will be taken care of.
Yeah.
They'll
put into foster care or whatever. But the big point is they elected to come illegally into the United States.
Foster care or whatever. Jesus Christ, if John Kelly had directed Sophie's Choice, it would have been called Ungrateful Bitch Got to Keep One Whole Kid.
No kidding.
Despite what John Kelly thinks, cruelty won't stop immigration. It will just make immigrants' lives harder and strain our already overwhelmed system. The Office of Refugee Resettlement, which deals with any child who arrived in the country unaccompanied by an adult, already has a terrible track record of keeping an eye on kids. In 2017, the ORR lost nearly 1,500 children. 1,500! These people seem really bad at keeping track of unaccompanied minors. How about we don't make a ton more minors unaccompanied, and we don't treat any kids like criminals, no matter what Homeland Security Secretary and balayage victim Kirstjen Nielsen says.
Uh-huh.
What do you say to people who worry about the impact of separating parents and children and that sort of thing?
Don't break the law.
Don't break the law.
I mean, that's why they're separated, because they're breaking the law.
Oh, God.
Look, Kirstjen, I'm sorry your parents took a normal name, jumbled up the letters, and threw you in a J like you're the Norse god of being white when you know your ass is from Clearwater, Florida. But that's no excuse to treat us like we're dumb. We know this isn't just about breaking the law, because you're also doing this to families who are legally seeking asylum.
Yep.
Woman fleeing the Congo. She comes to the United States not sneaking in.
Nope.
She's showing up at a port of entry to say, I am here seeking seeking asylum in America, and the U.S. government does what?
Oh, let me guess. The usual? They took her daughter away? Oh, yeah, that's right. Two people following the process to the letter were forcibly separated and spent their first 4 months in this country detained in different time zones. So now, after decades of ignoring the issue, Americans are finally paying attention. Well, most of us. Ivanka Trump, who works at the White House, chose to post the second most oblivious tweet we've seen this week. You know, Ivanka, that's a beautiful photo of you and your child, but let me just say, one mother to another, do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless cunt. He listens to you.
Uh-huh.
Put on something tight and low cut and tell your father to fucking stop it. Tell him it was an Obama thing and see how it goes, okay?
Okay. Well, I would say to that, thank you, Samantha Bee. For saying it as it is. But as Sarah Sanders put it in a statement, the language used by Samantha Bee last night is vile and vicious. The collective silence on the left and its media allies is appalling. Her disgusting comments and show are not fit for broadcast, and executives at Time Warner and TBS must demonstrate that such explicit profanity about female members of this administration will not be condoned on its network. Vile language and explicit profanity against females. Where have I heard those before?
Our country's going to hell. It's going to hell. What the hell are we doing?
Knock the hell out of them.
My tax proposal cuts the hell out of taxes.
I don't give a damn. He gets the nomination, they're going to sue his ass off. We'll beat the shit out of them. Let them beat the shit out of ISIS also.
They're ripping the shit out of the sea. We're going to knock the shit out of ISIS. Going to knock the shit out of them.
Whoever the hell brought this mic system, don't pay the son of a bitch to put it in, I'll tell you. You shouldn't pay the bastard.
But it's political bullshit.
She said he's a pussy.
And you can tell them to go themselves.
You're not going to raise that fucking price, you understand?
Listen, you motherfuckers, we can tax you 25%. What kind of people do we have?
I moved on her like a bitch, but I couldn't get there, and she was married. And all of a sudden, I see her. She's now got the big phony tits and everything. She's totally changed her look. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy.
Vulgar. And explicit profanity against females. Trump does not apologize. Yet, Samantha Bee, you know, whether you think it was warranted or not, this morning tweeted out, I would like to sincerely apologize to Ivanka Trump and to my viewers for using an expletive on my show to describe her last night. It was inappropriate and inexcusable. I crossed a line and I deeply regret it. Now, I'm one who does not really like the C word. I don't use it often. I'll use it when quoting George Carlin. You know, the seven dirty words you can't say: shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits. but we're not on broadcast media, so I can say those things. Thank you very much. But yeah, it's not a word that I choose to use, but sometimes it fits. Sometimes it fits. And there's a big, big difference between profanity and racism. Samantha Bee may be guilty of profanity, but not racism. Donald Trump is guilty of both. All right, let's get into the news, shall we?
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo welcomed Kim Yong-choi, the right-hand man to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, to New York last night, where they had dinner and tried to reach a broad agreement on what a successful summit between Trump and Kim might look like.
The Secretary of State Mike Pompeo had dinner in the city this evening with the right-hand man to North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. There was no press present. I've been asked to tell you and stress this. These pictures were from the U.S. State Department. We were not allowed in to record the moment. The North Korean official is here representing the government. His name is Jim Young Chol, making a very rare visit to New York City. Imagine just culturally what that is like. To note, we are told the two men dined for over an hour with interpreters, aides, and a ton of security present, and they will meet again tomorrow. As NBC News tells it tonight, U.S. officials and outside experts see these talks as a critical step in determining whether to proceed with a summit on June 12th. There are a ton of hurdles, including security, logistics, and, of course, the big one, North Korea's nuclear weapons program. Now, the Secretary of State wrote on Twitter today that he was looking forward to negotiations and that the U.S. is, quote, committed to the complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. That, of course, bumps up against the intelligence assessment that NBC News is exclusively reporting, saying that it has, quote, concluded that North Korea does not intend to give up its nuclear weapons anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. The Washington Post is reporting this morning that 2 days of talks between Pompeo and this senior North Korean official ended abruptly this morning with no immediate announcement of progress toward reinstating the previous scheduled June 12th summit talks between Trump and Kim. Trump took to Twitter early this morning to announce that he'd be pardoning right-wing author, filmmaker, whatever the fuck this guy is, Dinesh D'Souza, later this afternoon. Seriously? We'll be giving a full pardon, capitalized, to Dinesh D'Souza today. He was treated very unfairly by our government. In case you're wondering, D'Souza pleaded guilty to violating federal campaign laws in 2014 and was convicted of a felony. He was charged with illegally organizing $10,000 campaign donations from two people for Wendy Long's 2012 Senate bid, which she lost. D'Souza and Long were friends at Dartmouth, and he remained a supporter of Long's when she ran as a Republican for Senate. Trump's decision to pardon D'Souza comes one day after he met with reality TV star Kim Kardashian about prison reform. Kardashian has been advocating for a pardon for Alice Marie Johnson, a 65-year-old woman who was serving a life sentence in prison for a nonviolent drug offense. So far, Johnson has spent more than 20 years in federal prison. So no word on Johnson. But he's pardoning D'Souza. And today, Trump also told reporters that he's considering commuting the remainder of the sentence of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, who was convicted in 2010 on charges related to the selling of President Barack Obama's former Senate seat. I believe Blagojevich was a contestant on The Apprentice. Unbelievable. Trump also said he was weighing the case of Martha Stewart, the author and television personality who was convicted in 2004 of obstructing justice and lying to investigators about a well-timed stock sale. Go figure. The fallout continues over Roseanne Barr's racist tweets that prompted the cancellation of her TV show by ABC. Now, rather than commenting on Roseanne Barr's statement, Trump, as usual, made it all about himself. He tweeted, Bob Iger of ABC called Valerie Jarrett to let her know that ABC does not tolerate comments like those made by Roseanne Barr. Gee, he never called President Donald J. Trump to apologize for the horrible statements made and said about me on ABC. Maybe I just didn't get the call. Well, Trump still hasn't specified what horrible statements were made on ABC about him, although there are no known instances of the president being called a racial slur on any ABC news programs. Trump continuously used racial slurs against the previous president. Need I just invoke birtherism? Oh, that's right. Trump doesn't apologize. However, Sarah Sanders was asked about it during yesterday's White House press briefing, and she came armed with some examples of things that happen on ABC that they need to apologize to the president for.
The president's pointing to the hypocrisy in the media, saying that the most horrible things about this president, and nobody addresses it. Where was Bob Iger's apology to the White House staff for Jemele Hill calling the president and anyone associated with him a white supremacist?
Well, he is.
To Christians around the world for Joy Behr calling Christianity a mental illness.
She did apologize.
Where was the apology for Kathy Griffin going on a profane rant against the president on The View after a photo showed her holding President Trump's decapitated head? And where was the apology from Bob Iger for ESPN hiring Keith Olbermann after his numerous expletive-laced tweets attacking the president as a Nazi and even expanding Olbermann's role after that attack against the president's family? This is a double standard that the president is speaking about. No one is defending her comments. They're inappropriate, but that's what the point that he was making.
And it's unfounded. When Trump learns to apologize, maybe he'll get some apologies. This morning, Dump was at it again, making it all about him, tweeting, "Iger, where's my call of apology? You and ABC have offended millions of people, and they demand a response. How is Brian Ross doing since he tanked the market with an ABC lie? Yet no apology. Double standard." Since Trump brought up Brian Ross, he's probably talking about the time when ABC's chief investigative correspondent erroneously reported that former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was getting ready to testify that the president ordered him to make contact with Russian officials in 2016. Ross corrected the report later that day, and on top of that was suspended for several weeks as ABC addressed the incident. So, yeah. I'm so sick of the double standard. Anyway, the New York Times, moving on, is reporting that the former acting FBI director, Andrew McCabe, wrote a confidential memo last spring recounting a conversation that offered significant behind-the-scenes details on the firing of James Comey. Michael Schmidt is one of the reporters who broke the story.
In the days after Comey's fire, there are these discussions between Rod Rosenstein and Andrew McCabe, who's running the FBI at the time. And Rosenstein says that Trump wanted him to include Russia in the letter. McCabe, obviously unnerved by this, following Comey's, what he had done, writes a memo about this, gives it to Mueller. The question is, was Rosenstein saying Trump said, don't put, say I'm firing you because of the Russia investigation, because you're looking at my campaign? Or was he saying, put in the letter that I was not under investigation in the Russia investigation, and thank you for telling me three times that I was not under
investigation? And Michael, again, that's again, while we don't know, that certainly would fit everything that happened in the weeks beforehand, that he was obsessed with Comey telling him, you are not a part of our Russian investigation.
Comey had time and time again at congressional hearings to say that the president wasn't under investigation, and he would not do that. He was telling Trump this in private, but he would not do it publicly. Trump called him several times. Comey told Trump to go through the Justice Department on this issue. Comey was very concerned about being out there on his own again, coming off of the election. He didn't want to go that far. Interestingly, as Comey said on his book tour, the FBI general counsel at the time disagreed with Comey's assessment that Trump was not under investigation. The general counsel actually thought that Trump, because he was in charge of the campaign and they were looking at the campaign, was part of the investigation.
Well,
okay. In a tweet this morning, because Trump can't help himself, Trump claimed he did not fire James Comey as FBI director over the Russia investigation. Here's the tweet. Not that it matters, but I never fired James Comey because of Russia. The corrupt mainstream media loves to keep pushing that narrative, but they know it is not true. I'm just guessing he was whining like that. Just a reminder that Trump admitted in an interview with NBC's Lester Holt that he fired Comey over Russia.
Regardless of recommendation, I was going to fire Comey, knowing there was no good time to do it. And in fact, when I decided to just do it, I said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story.
Ah! Anyway, on to a couple other stories. The Trump administration again reversed itself in saying it will levy hefty steel and aluminum tariffs on the European Union, Canada, and Mexico starting tomorrow, a move likely to lead to retaliation and the risk and risk the future of the North American Free Trade Agreement. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross today said the president has decided to end the temporary exemptions for the three key trading allies, despite 2 months of lobbying to avoid the tariffs. Retaliation seems to be coming quickly as in response, the European Union said it would impose duties, quote, on a number of imports from the United States, referring to a 10-page list of targets for retaliation and published in March, which included Kentucky bourbon and Harley-Davidson motorcycles. EU leaders also vowed to proceed with a complaint to the World Trade Organization. The Mexican government said it would levy import taxes on U.S. exports of pork bellies, blueberries, apples, grapes, certain cheeses, and various types of steel. And in Canada, Chrystia Freeland says Canada will retaliate with tariffs of up to $16.6 billion on U.S. exports of steel, aluminum, and other products. That's the total amount of Canadian exports of steel and aluminum to the U.S., she says. It just keeps getting worse, worser and worser. Here's a bit of good news. The Virginia State Senate voted yesterday to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Yes, it is still alive and, teetering on the edge. I was going to say would be a serious overstatement. With four Republicans crossing party lines to join all Senate Democrats in backing the move, the House of Delegates, which already passed a version of Medicaid expansion, will need to vote again to make expansion a reality. But the odds now seem overwhelming that Virginia will become the 33rd state, in addition to Washington, D.C., to expand Medicaid. Baby steps. Hey, people, we can make them into giant steps, giant leaps and bounds, if you'll only vote. Howie Klein is coming up. We'll talk about some primaries in which you can replace the corrupt Dems with some real progressives, because there are a whole bunch of them on the ballot running in primaries. But you got to be informed and you got to vote. So stick around. Howie Klein of the Blue America PAC and DownWithTyranny.com is coming up next. Don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Why was Big Pharma applauding when Donald Trump announced his plan to stop the drug industry's gouging of consumers? I'll tell you today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. President Trump is said to see himself as a sort of Teddy Roosevelt. TR, however, was known as a trust buster, while DT has become known as a trust hugger. We recently saw the hugger in action when he held a PR event to ballyhoo 50 proposals to stop Big Pharma from gouging American consumers with monopolistic drug pricing. People are rightly outraged that pill-peddling giants exploit patients who have life-threatening diseases and routinely jack up prices on common drugs by some 10% a year. As a presidential candidate, Trump jumped on this hot issue, accusing drug makers of, quote, getting away with murder. So now, with typical modesty, he has revealed his plan to stop the ripoffs, calling his 50 proposals the, quote, most sweeping action in history to lower the price of prescription drugs for the American people. Yeah, sweeping, as in sweeping the problem under the White House rug. 50 is just a political number meant to puff up Trump's plan as something big. But as one congressional Democrat pointed out, all 50 amount to, quote, a sugar-coated nothing pill. It even fails to include his own campaign promise to use the purchasing power of Medicare to negotiate lower prices for seniors. Far from feeling punished, Big Pharma itself felt it had gotten a warm presidential hug. Drug company stock prices went up immediately after the presidential speech. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's really no surprise that Trump is letting these corporate profiteers continue getting away with murder. After all, political posturing aside, he has stacked his administration with drug industry executives like Alex Azar, a former Eli Lilly honcho who is now his Secretary of Health. How revealing that Azar was standing right behind the president at the White House media event, beaming and applauding as Trump announced, well, a lot of nothing.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues?
Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal, and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
In addition to DownWithTyranny.com, Howie Klein, of course, the one of the founders of and the guy behind the Blue America PAC that identifies and helps raise money for some of the best progressive candidates, the ones we really need to be behind in primary season. Hello, Howie Klein. Uh-oh. Howie? Don't tell me this is going to happen again. All right. We're going to try one more time. This happened last week. Howie wasn't there. He had fallen asleep. And
hello?
There he is. Hey, Howie Klein.
Hi. I was on, but I couldn't hear anything.
Oh, that's weird. Okay. Well, good. We got each other now. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. Thank you.
Good.
You?
I'm going on lack of sleep, but aside from that, I'm hanging in there.
Good.
What leads to your good feelings?
I'm just an incurable optimist. Everything always looks good to me. I'm like a guy, 9/10 glass, 9/10 full.
Really? I need some of that to rub off on me. Just because things sometimes seem so insurmountable that I wonder how we're going to get out of it. So I could use some of your optimism today. So I'll ask again, still optimism about a big blue wave in November?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, just look at Tuesday. And I mean, you probably, along with most of our listeners, were unaware that there was another... another special election, this one in Mississippi. Although Mississippi is a funny place for these legislative seats because they don't run, they're nonpartisan. So it doesn't appear on the ballot who the Democrat is and who the Republican is. But everyone knows because the Democratic Party endorses the Democrats and the Republican Party endorses the Republicans. And of course, the Republicans run on very conservative platforms, and the Democrats run on more, usually on more liberal platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone knew that Rosebud was the Democrat, and he won.
Well, in Mississippi.
In Mississippi. Now, it was and the Republicans really went after this seat. They were looking to be able to say, look, we've turned it all around. We're winning. We took this seat. And they put a lot of money into it, and the Democrats didn't put much money into it, and the Democrat won anyway, an African-American Democrat.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, that is the kind of thing, regardless of what these silly polls say from day to day or week to week, it doesn't matter. I mean, they go up and down.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, right now they're up anyway. But I don't even care that they're up. I don't care that they're down. Not when we have these consistent special elections showing that when people go to the polls, they're voting for change. They're voting to put a stop or at least a check on the real danger to America, which is Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is getting that now. I shouldn't say everyone is getting it, but more than 50% are getting it. And that's why they're electing Democrats now. They are too scared to give Trump another 2 years unchecked. So what we have here, generally speaking, are Democrats voting for Democrats with great enthusiasm. Republicans, when they go to the ballot, are voting, when they go to the, you know, the polling places, they are voting for the Republicans, but so many of them are unenthusiastic that the Republican turnout is very, very down.
Mm-hmm.
And then independents are leaning very much towards Democrats. So that's what we're seeing in these special elections. Even the special elections that people aren't paying attention to, like the one I just talked about in Mississippi.
Right. Well, that is good
yep.
news and reason for optimism. So I'll try not to be such a Debbie Downer.
Thank you.
For a while now, we've been talking about Joe Crowley, who you tell us is the most corrupt member of Congress, and he's poised to take over Democratic leadership in the House. That's if he can get through his primary. Now, he's being primaried by a woman named Alexandria Ocasio.
Yes, who is a very young woman who has, you know, hasn't been in elective position, but has worked, for example, for Obama, and has been, you know, more of a grassroots. Her background is in grassroots political. Or grassroots politics, let's put it like that. And you know, people say, oh, unless you've come up through the legislature, you know, you're not qualified. Well, I disagree. And I, in fact, I was just sitting and writing a story for tomorrow about that, because Ron Brownstein, who's no dummy, is writing how all the California Democrats are going to have a disaster because they don't have a bench. And he then defined bench meaning if you were a legislator coming up, you know, and it's the point, you know, one point you could say is look at Pramila Jayapal,
mm-hmm.
look at Ted Lieu, look at, you know, and any number, you know, Jamie Raskin is another
mm-hmm.
one. These are some of the best members of Congress, and they were in those state legislatures. They were leaders in their state legislatures. Well, yes. But then you can say some of the best members of Congress were not in their state legislatures. Alan Grayson, when he ran for Congress, he had never run for anything before. And he went in, and not only was he a great and inspiring member of Congress, but Alan passed more legislation and under Republican leadership, but he passed more legislation than any other member of Congress, and not just Democrats. He passed more legislation than any Republican. So, you know, the argument doesn't really hold up. You know, now Ninette Baragon, you know, she went to bat against a very, very, very powerful, prominent state senator. Who had come up that way, and everyone said, oh, this is a race we don't even have to look at. She has no chance until she won. And now she's a, you know, very good member of Congress,
mm-hmm.
and he's, you know, walking around looking for a job as a lobbyist.
This is also, it seems to be anyway, shaping up to be the year of the woman.
Yeah, it does. Or, you know, although I have to say I've been hearing that since I was a teenager, but yes. It is, you know, there. You know, the thing that scares me about that, and you seem to be luring me into this old discussion again, is that when there's a good woman running, like someone like Barbara Lee, someone
mm-hmm.
like Ninette Baragon, someone
mm-hmm.
like Pramila Jayapal, hey, I'm thrilled to have the year of the woman. But yet, when you look at the very, very worst Democrat in Congress, it's absolutely, unquestionably, by her voting record, Kyrsten Sinema, who's
right.
also a woman.
Right.
So you know, I'm very, you know, nervous about you know, about any of these identity groups. You know, no matter what it is. You know, some of the best members of Congress are gay,
mm-hmm.
and so is the worst.
Right.
You know, so any you can give me any identity group, and I will tell you, you know, that there is, you know, great members of Congress from that identity group, and also terrible.
Right.
So, you know, some people say, let's vote for military people. Well, yes, there are great veterans and terrible veterans. Let's vote for Asians, and there are great Asians, and there are terrible Asians.
Right. Now, the point.
There is no identity group that you can point out that doesn't have both.
Right.
The great ones and the bad ones, but the people who are propagating the idea of, and usually making money off it, of these identity group politics, they don't care if it's a good person or a bad person, or corrupt or not corrupt, or has good legislative ideas or bad ones. They're just pushing the whatever the identity group is.
Right.
And that's something I trust.
And I'm not advocating an Emily's List type thing. And we've discussed Emily's List at length here, where they'll go for the female over, you know, someone much more progressive. I'm certainly not advocating for that. All I'm saying is there are more women running this year than ever before in history. And it seems like the last big primary we had the week before last, you know, we saw some victories, most notably in Atlanta, where Stacey Abrams won the primary to be, Georgia's governor.
Was also a woman.
Yes, she was. So there was
with the same name, Stacey.
Another Stacey. Fortunately, the better
Abrams,
Stacey won.
The thing that differentiated her from the other Stacey, since they were both women, the thing that differentiated her was how a stalwart, brilliant, progressive she was.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one wasn't a moron, but the other one was a little bit more of a centrist.
Right.
Whereas Stacey, not a centrist. Stacey had a record of leadership in the state legislature that was, you know, breathtaking. And she will be a very, very good governor if she gets in there.
Right. And she'll make history by being the first black female governor in the country, too. So there's that. It seems like this is more another change election coming. Howie, is there any data, or is it too soon in the primary season to figure out how progressives are doing as opposed to the more centrist or conservative Democratic, so-called Democratic candidates that the DCCC is pushing on us?
A little bit too early, although I want to point out a couple of things. First of all, to go back to what we were talking about, and then I'll come back to what we were talking about after that.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is where just being a woman is really important was shown up a couple of weeks ago in Pennsylvania. And the reason for that is because Pennsylvania didn't have one single woman in their congressional delegation. So no senators
right.
who were women
right.
and no of Congress who are women. There's also no women in statewide office. So there, you're looking at something that is abnormal. I mean, this is really bizarre. It's not like they've never had women. They have, but there are none now. So a number of women won their, not just their nominations. I mean, they won in totally Democratic districts where they can, you know, there's a joke about measuring the curtains. They really can go measure the curtains because they're going to be in Congress. So just by the fact that they are women is a big deal and important. So I'm very happy about that. Now to the next question that you brought up about if it's a little bit too early to have data, yes, it is. However, that said, there are some very, very interesting individual cases where you can look at that and say it's an important factor. And one of the best and most important ones, and certainly not the only one, but very important, is in Omaha, Nebraska. As it turns out, Kara Eastland beat, now she's obviously a woman, and she beat a Blue Dog Democrat named Brad Ashford. And no one thought that could happen. I mean, he had, you know, tons more money than her. He was endorsed by not just the Blue Dogs and the New Dems, but also the DCCC. And everyone they could get, you know, anyone who listens to their bullshit and does whatever they tell them, they all endorsed Brad Ashford. And Kara was basically a very, very, very hardworking grassroots Democrat who did it the old-fashioned way. You know, without money, without big money, she just went in there and knocked doors and knocked doors and knocked doors and introduced herself to as many people as she could in this two-county district. So, you know, she had never held office before. She was a grassroots Democrat, and she won. It was a very, very instructive and important race about how you do it. And, you know, I had dinner with her this week. She was taking a minute off from her from between the primary and the general.
Mm-hmm.
And her daughter was about to go. Her daughter was looking for college, so she and her husband came out where the daughter was looking to go to Occidental. And while she was out here, we've known each other before. And while she was out here, we went and had dinner one night. And, you know, she had a lot to tell me about how she won this race, which no one thought there was any chance that she could win. Of course, Blue America did, mm-hmm. and we were the first organization to back her outside of Nebraska. But even the woman who is the chair of the Nebraska Democratic Party not only didn't endorse her, but sort of leaned a little bit in the other direction.
Wow.
Because that's what the DCCC and the DNC wanted. So Kara, I mean, Omaha is basically Douglas County. The Omaha and its suburbs is Douglas County. Fortunately, the Douglas County Democratic Party was scrupulously fair. They didn't lean towards anybody, and they were very, very, very fair, while the whole Democratic establishment was pushing for this horrible blue dog, Brad Ashford. And that had a lot to do with how she won as well. We had like a neutral county Democratic Party, and that made a very, very big difference for her.
That's how it should be. I mean, I just heard Tom Perez came out and endorsed Andrew Cuomo in the New York gubernatorial race. When you have, what's her name? I'm drawing a blank now. Sorry.
You're talking about Cynthia Nixon?
Cynthia Nixon running. The party should stay out of primaries, period.
Yep.
End of story. So this brings us.
I just read something a moment ago, just before you called,
mm-hmm.
that really made my heart sore. I mean, sore. I mean,
right.
I don't mean like sore like you have a sore foot. I mean sore like your heart soars.
Right, like soaring.
Yes, like
soaring. A good thing. Yes.
So Zephyr Teachout.
Yes.
Who came really close to beating, who would have beat Andrew Cuomo last time, except for the machines in New York City and the New York suburbs. Those are, you know, they wait till the rest of the vote comes in and they say, how many votes do you need? And that's how many votes they get. I mean, that is the picture of corrupt politics in New York, are the, you know, especially Brooklyn, Queens, Nassau. I mean, it's so corrupt that it's beyond belief.
Right.
Anyway, she won almost every county in the state, except those downstate New York counties.
Right.
Anyway, she's running for attorney general.
Yep.
And she did something incredible today, which she endorsed Alexandria Ocasio, who we started talking about. And even New Yorkers who know how terrible Crowley is and hate him and want to see him lose, they're too scared. And leave it to Zephyr Teachout not to be scared. And she just tweeted a few minutes ago two really strong tweets. In fact, one of them, I had done one retweet and I was then putting together something else. With more depth to it about her second tweet, and you know that's the kind of thing that you want to see, and because obviously the entire New York, whether it's liberal or conservative or in the middle or anything, the whole New York apparatus is behind Crowley.
Right. Well, you know, we've mentioned some great, sometimes a great video really helps. It helped in the case of, certainly Randy Brice, his, that kickoff campaign video really helped to put him on the map, as it did.
Absolutely.
For,
and the same exact thing.
Amy McGrath.
Who is something that we didn't mention and we probably should have, was the one in Kentucky 5, mm-hmm. again, where you had an unknown woman running against the mayor of Lexington, who is very, very well known. He's a blue dog. And she put out a video, Amy McGrath I'm talking about,
right.
put out a video as at least as good as Randy's. So incredible introductory video. I don't know if you remember it, but you know, she was an Air Force fighter pilot. Mm-hmm. And this video was so strong and so powerful. And unfortunately, where Randy was able to get up and speak and be better than his video, she was not ready. She was not ready. And, you know, the video was so good that she was getting all of this national attention going on TV and radio, and she was weak. And that made a lot of people, including me, dismiss her.
Right.
But what happened is as the campaign went on, she was getting better and better and better mm-hmm. until the end of the campaign, she was able to convey what she had in mind. She knew how to speak to audiences, and she was really, really good. And she was up against a professional politician, but she did great. So there you've got these two incredible introductory videos. And there have been others as well that are really good. Jared Golden in Maine has one that's mm-hmm. awesome. There's a guy who's running in Hawaii, Kaniela Ng. He's got one that's incredible. So there have been a number of really exceptional videos, and now we, I'm sure that what you were bringing up is what a great video Alexandria Ocasio has. It just came out, I think, yesterday or the day before yesterday. I think yesterday was one in Spanish, the same video but in Spanish, and the day before was the one originally that they put out, which is in English.
Well, I have it here, so let's play it. Play the one in English, because that's the one I'll understand anyway. It's called The Courage to Change.
Women like me aren't supposed to run for office. I wasn't born to a wealthy or powerful family. Mother from Puerto Rico, dad from the South Bronx. I was born in a place where your zip code determines your destiny. My name is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I'm an educator, an organizer, a working-class New Yorker. I've worked with expectant mothers, I've waited tables, and led classrooms. And going into politics wasn't in the plan. But after 20 years of the same representation, we have to ask, who has New York been changing for? Every day gets harder for working families like mine to get by. The rent gets higher, healthcare covers less, and our income stays the same. It's clear that these changes haven't been for us, and we deserve a champion. It's time to fight for a New York that working families can afford. That's why I'm running for Congress. This race is about people versus money. We've got people, they've got money. It's time we acknowledge that not all Democrats are the same. That a Democrat who takes corporate money, profits off foreclosure, doesn't live here, doesn't send his kids to our schools, doesn't drink our water or breathe our air, cannot possibly represent us. What the Bronx and Queens needs is Medicare for all, tuition-free public college, a federal jobs guarantee, and criminal justice reform. We can do it now. It doesn't take 100 years to do this. It takes political courage. A New York for the many is possible. It's time for one of us. Vote for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on June 26th.
What a great ad. Howie Klein's back with us now. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So their primary is coming up June 26th. Any early indications on how it's looking? Is Joe Crowley running scared?
Yes, as a matter of fact. Now, Joe Crowley, you know, he's got like, you know, $1 trillion, and she's got like, you know, 35 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And he's paid no attention to her whatsoever for the entire campaign. And then he did a little bit of internal polling, and I'm guessing that he's suddenly, like, freaking out because he just agreed to a debate. I mean, he literally wouldn't even talk to her or even discuss the idea of a debate, and now he's agreed to a television debate, and that's because he's scared. He is definitely running scared. She is an incredible candidate. He is, you know, a doofus who doesn't live in the district. He lives in Virginia. His whole family lives in Virginia with him. And he literally has not, I mean, when he first took over this district, you know, he's a jovial Irish guy. He was given the district. He never ran, He was just given the district. I mean, you know, as hard as that is to believe, that's what happened. And, it was a pretty white district. And now, it's less than 20% white. And it's a lot of people who speak Spanish. And it's a lot of people, you know, it's a real melting pot kind of district. Jackson Heights is included.
Mm-hmm.
So it's people from all over the world, and they don't even know who the hell he is. His name recognition in that district is, you know, it's getting to be less than hers at this point. She's knocking on doors and meeting people. And she's, I don't want to even talk about it, but Blue America has an incredible little campaign that we're doing as an independent expenditure for her. And we're not the only ones who are.
That's
so
great.
So we're getting her very well known, and no one knows who the hell he is. And, he, you know, like I said, doesn't live there, doesn't relate to the folks there. And he's very, very scared.
So if we want to change the leadership in Congress, this is how you do it. He's the heir apparent to Nancy Pelosi. Vote him out. And the people of part of the Bronx and Queens, I used to live right there. I wasn't quite in the district. I was Bayside. So it looks like I was in an adjoining district. I left there in 1971 when I was just a kid, but I know the area well. They could do the right thing.
Yep, Bayside's a little bit south of where they are, but you know they've got like a big part of the Bronx, the South Bronx, and a big part of Northern Queens.
Great. The one last thing before we run out of time in about 2 minutes. Again, there seems to be this fight between progressives and who the media and the party like to call, you know, centrists or moderates. We're talking conservadems. That's my name for them. The polling shows that people want a progressive agenda from the Democrats. And you have a post that went up yesterday at downwithtyranny.com where you did sort of a roundup with some of the Blue America endorsed candidates talking about this.
I talked to a few incumbents as well, mm-hmm. as well as candidates, because there is this, you know, silly claim being made that either you can run on issues or you can run against Trump. And what I was doing is I was trying to show that Democrats can chew gum and walk at the same time, mm-hmm. and how important it is to do both, to have a really strong platform and to be running for things like Medicare for All and free public education and employment, you know, things that
minimum wage.
Well, thank you. A livable minimum wage, mm-hmm. and it's important to run on these things, and at the same time, be very, very clear with the voters that you are eager to see what Mueller comes up with, and that if Trump has committed crimes, which many of us feel that he has, you can't impeach somebody on your feelings. You impeach somebody on evidence. And if Mueller comes up with that evidence, which we all think he's going to, Trump needs to be impeached. And, you know, when you hear Democrats saying, no, it's a bad move to make politically, screw them.
Right.
You know, if the evidence is there to impeach Trump, it doesn't matter what the politics of it is. You know, if the evidence is there, You've got to move forward in impeaching him. If the evidence isn't there, you can't do it.
Exactly.
No question about that.
Exactly. But if Democrats control the House, at least they can start holding hearings. They can start taking back some control, and they can start putting up a firewall against some of the bad shit that the Republicans are foisting upon us every day.
Yep.
Hey, real quick, Howie, because we've got like 30 seconds left. But this coming Tuesday, is that the California primary?
Yes, it is. Very, very important primary. And it's not just California. There are primaries all over the country that day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a super primary day. And, you know, I can't really tell you, what, especially in 30 seconds, what's going to happen. But, you know, the DCCC, again, has been up to no good trying to foist these just awful conservative candidates on us. And they've been screwing around, and now they're worried because California has a weird primary where it's possible for two Republicans to get in, and no Democrats in the runoffs, the general election runoffs. So it's a weird thing, and the DCCC has destroyed the chance of having good primaries in California.